does that woman, if that twice married woman is now widowed without children, does she have to, does she undergo yibum? So one of the questions about that issue was whether or not she would do a yibum with one of the deceased brothers. And we had this kal v'chomer, right? The kal v'chomer that was supposed to be indicative of whether or not she does, do you hold to this kal v'chomer or not, right? The kal v'chomer was really machzor grushaso, that woman is not supposed to marry her husband a second time if she's been married to someone else in between. So if the deceased was not supposed to marry her, then certainly the yavam, right, the brother of the deceased, should not marry her. So does that kal v'chomer hold up or not? If it holds up, then there's no yibum. If it does not hold up, then there should be yibum anyway, because the other argument could be, but machzor grushaso, even though it is inappropriate and it's wrong and it violates a law, the kedushin is chal. The kedushin holds, and if the kedushin is chal, then if the brother dies without children, then maybe yibum should play a role. So that was the question, and we're on Yubez Amal Aleph. So Merle, the answer that suggested is Tanisua. We learned in a Mishnah, right? Top of Yubez Amal Aleph. Heitz Achas Ksher Vachs Psula. If you have, we talked about this case before, you have two widows, right, that need to undergo either yibum or chalitza. And one's considered a kshira, one's considered a psula. And that's sort of the question, the operative question is, in what way are they kosher and pasul? Last time we talked about how one was kosher at this moment as a widow to a kohen, and the other one had been divorced prior to this marriage and couldn't marry a kohen anyway. So if you recall, we said that if the man has no, if you're doing chalitza, do chalitza with the woman who was divorced already because she couldn't marry a kohen. However, if the widow undergoes chalitza, then she wouldn't be allowed to marry. You've invalidated her to marry a kohen now, and it was just unnecessary. So, we're not sure what that means. That was just an interpretation of the Mishnah. We're going to offer a different interpretation that we hope to resolve our question about whether machzor grushaso undergoes yibum. So, if you recall, the Mishnah said, one woman is kosher, one woman is pasul. If the yavam wants to do chalitza, chalitza psula, so do chalitza on the psula, the disqualified. If he wants to do yibum, yabim l'kshira, then he should do yibum on the kosher one. So my kshira, my psula, right? So this is part of, ingrained in this quote is a question of what exactly does it mean to be kosher and pasul? Ilam l'kshira k'shira li'alma. If you say that kosher means li'alma, which we said means fit for a kohen, now, because Cohen's allowed to marry a widow, not a divorcee, psula psuli alma, and apostle, right? Invalid means that she's invalid in regards to a Cohen. So that doesn't work. Why? Kevin de l'didei chazia. Forget about the Cohen. What about the brother, the yavam? Both of them are qualified. Both of them are allowed, or are allowed to be married with the day to the yavam himself, right? The brother of the deceased. My nafkali mine. What difference does it make to him whether he does which one he does yibum or chalitza on? They're both. It's not like our cases from the Mishnah where the yavam is an erva to the yavama. Then it's a problem. Here, there's no. Psula, if you want to interpret it that way, there's nothing puzzle about this woman for the purposes of yibum to this yavam. It happens to be that if the yavam chooses to do chalitza on one of the women, it'll end up being that woman now is not connected, no zeka to the yavam, and she can't go ahead and marry a kohen. Elala kshera kshera le. It must mean, when it says kosher here, it means kosher to the yavam, psula psula lei, and pasul means pasul to the yavam, right? Umainihu, and what does it mean that he's that she's disqualified? Machzer grushaso, right? It's a machzer grushaso. He wants to suggest that machzer grushaso is the case in the Mishnah that says that that is possible for the yavam to do yibam with. Uktani imhayim yavim yavim lekshira. It says if you do yibam, you should do yibam on the other one, right? So this resolves the question about not really about machzer grushaso about yibam, but about the tsara of the machzer grushaso, right? The co-wife of the machzer grushaso. We wanted to prove from here that even though the machzer grushaso doesn't undergo yibam, nonetheless, the co-wife of a machzer grushaso will undergo yibam based on the interpretation of this Mishnah, where one is pasul and one is kosher. The pasul is the machzer grushaso, and the kshira is the tsara of the machzer grushaso, and we want to use that as a proof that the co-wife of a machzer grushaso, of a woman who was married twice to the same man, with an intervening marriage in between, would be kosher to do yibum, the co-wife, to a different brother, to the yavam. So we say, no, this is not the case. Ksher li'alma, no, we understand the Mishnah as we had it originally. Ksher li'alma means kosher to the world, which means to kohanim, namely, the widow had not been married, divorced prior. Psul li'alma and invalid means that this other woman would not be allowed to marry a kohen because she has a divorce in her background with the kamart, and you ask came into the day chazem anafkalamina, and the problem we had with that is why are we worried about the kohen vis-a-vis the yavam? He's perfectly allowed to marry, to do yibum or chalitza on either of the two women, so why would one be called pasul? It's not possible to him, it's possible to the Kohen. Why do we care about that? So we answered this before. Mishum derav Yosef, right? Tamar Rav Yosef, Kanshan Rebbe, lo yishbochadam eibarav achayim tzrichim lehem. Don't be wasteful, right? Don't spill water that other people need. Don't do chalitza on a woman that could be permitted, that could go ahead and marry a Kohen, had you not done chalitza. You're doing chalitza anyway. Do chalitza on the woman that was invalid to marry a Kohen anyway. Okay, so that does not, we don't have a proof positive for whether the tsara, the co-wife of a machzer grushaso, would undergo yibum. Does the Kal v'chomer that applies to the machzer grushaso herself, namely the deceased was not allowed to marry her a second time because there was an intervening marriage. So certainly there's no yibum. Does that apply to the tsaros as well? We wanted to bring proofs. We didn't bring anything. The Gemara ends off that conversation without any conclusive position on the tsara of a machzer grushaso. So, okay. We're about 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12. About 15 lines from the top. Tashma, first word on the line. Hamachzer grushaso mishenises, right? So we're still working on this point, right? We're still working on whether a tsara of a machzer grushaso would undergo yibum. So tashma, come on from here. A machzer grushaso mishenises. If one takes his ex-wife back after she had full nisuin, right? Not just kiddushin. That was an earlier gemara as well. He vitzarata choletzet, right? She, and then the man then dies without children. So she, the machzer grushaso, and Sarasa, her co-wife, chuletzes, has to do chalitza. She can't do yibum, but chalitza. So it seems pretty clear. he v'tzarasa salkadaitach. Do you mean that both she and her co-wife require chalitza? That's never the case, right? Yibum chalitza, it's on one wife. It's not on all the wives. So what does it mean? He v'tzarasa tzricha chalitza. He v'tzarasa chalitzas, right? Ela ema, rather say, oh he, o tzarasa, right? It said, rather she or the other can undergo chalitza. Aye, but so that seems to imply that there is a zeka, right? Because if you're talking about chalitza, then there's also the possibility of yibum. So it seems that that seems to imply that it says, seems to be proof positive that that the tzara can undergo yibum. Vlav Teruzi Kamatarzula, didn't we go over this before? Teruzachi, you fix the brice as follows. He choletzes, right? The master grushasa requires chalitza. Tzarasa, o choletzes, o mesyabemes. The co-wife may either perform chalitza or yibum, right? So so we see that there's no yibum on the machzer grusha, so and that the kal v'chomer remains in place. Right? We said that the kal v'chomer was if the husband was not allowed to take her back, then the brother, the yavam, when the husband dies, should not be allowed to do yibum, and that is in fact seemingly what this brisa says. That the machzer grushaso can't undergo yibum, and the tzara can undergo yibum or chalitza. So it seems to end. There's a little bit of conversation about how exactly to read this gemara, but it seems to end by saying that the tzara of a machzer grushaso could undergo yibum or chalitza, which kind of makes sense because machzer grushaso kedushin is chal. If kedushin is chal, so you may have a kal v'chomer to tell us the yavam can't do yibum with the machzer grushaso, but the tzaros of the machzer grushaso at first blush should be eligible for yibum. Okay, now we're up to now we're going to shift gears. No longer talking about a machzer grushaso, talking about a different woman and her tsaros, her co-wives. So Amar of Lili Bar Mamal, Amar Mar Ukva, Amar Shmuel. Almost halfway down the page. Tsarat Mema'anes Asura Lema'ain. Right? Asura, sorry. Tsaras Mema'anes Asura Asura. Right? What's a Mema'anes? A Mema'anes is a case of a woman who was orphaned, and her brother or mother marries her off as a katana before she's a bat mitzvah to another man. We say that only a father has the right to marry his minor daughter off for it to be Kedushin that's recognized midiraisa. If a girl's father dies and her brother or mother marry her off, that's only Kedushin midrabanan. And that girl, when she reaches the age of 12, has the possibility of being mima'ein. Lima'ein means to refuse. This woman, this young woman can refuse the marriage and it's completely dissolved. Because again, the only person that can marry off a minor daughter is in the Torah is a father. And if a different relative does so, then that kedushin is only midrabanan. And then you have to renew that. You have to confirm that when she reaches the age of godless. But tsaras mima'enes asura, the co-wife. So let's say you have this girl is married to a man, and this man was married to another woman, right? So there's two wives. One of them was a katana, and the katana was did miyun, right, wanted to dissolve the marriage. So we say that the, and then the husband dies, right? So there is no possibility of yibum in that case. Okay, so Laman. So the order of operations was that the husband dies before the minor does miyun, and then she's still a minor, and she does miyun for the yavam. She says she refuses. She wants to dissolve the connection after the first husband dies. And then we say once she does miyun there, then the co-wife also is forbidden to the yavam. So Laman. So the Gemara asks Laman, to whom is the co-wife, is the tzara, forbidden? So ilei mala achim, if you want to say that the co-wife is forbidden to the brothers of the of the deceased, right? Hashtehi gufa sharia. That's difficult to say because, according to one opinion, this young woman who did miyun, right, is now allowed did miyun with one of the brothers, could then go ahead and marry one of the other brothers. Damar Shmuel, miyun b'zeh muteres b'zeh. If a girl who was married to one brother who died, and then does miyun still as a katana, does miyun with the, one of the other brothers, according to Shmuel, she can then go ahead and marry one of the other surviving brothers. Now you have to remember that the connection that she had to the husband and to any of the and to the yavam was only midrabanan, right? Because kedushin katana, marrying a minor, if it's not the father who orchestrates it, it's only a connection midrabanan, and therefore, if she refuses one surviving brother, she can then marry one of the other surviving brothers. So Tarasa Mibaya, is it necessary to tell us that the Tzara is permitted to the other brothers? Rather, Shmuel means that if a girl who's a widow, a katana, does miyun with one of the yavamas, with the yavam, right, the next oldest brother, let's say, then the Tzara becomes prohibited to him, then the Tzara becomes prohibited to him as well. Umay Shna, so the Gemara asks on Shmuel, Umay Shna Mimanis Deshai La'achin. Why is it that a Mimanis, right, a katana who's widowed and then refuses, is permitted to who is the Yavam, is then allowed to marry one of the other brothers. Why is that allowed? Because the miyun was only towards the yavam. She didn't do anything towards the other brothers, and therefore one of the other brothers can marry her. So we asked Saranami, lo avda behu maisa. So the tzara also did not do a maisa. Not only did the tzara not do a maisa towards the other brothers, but the tzara did not even have, did not do anything, any refusal or any type of severing of the relationship, even to the brother who was rejected by the katana, right? There was no, the tzara did nothing. So why should the tzara be prohibited to the yavam? Just because the katana, the minor child who was married to the deceased, did an act of miyun towards the towards that brother. So the Gemara says it really has nothing to do with this case. It's a gezeira for a different case. Gezeira mishum tzarat b'tel mamanes. Right? These things get complicated, but it's a gezeira right? We don't allow the tsara of a mema'enes to marry the yavam that was refused by the was the subject of miyan because of a different case with the where tsarat bitel mema'enet, where you have a case of you have a case of a niece, right? No, it's not so complicated, actually. It's the case of a niece, right? So a man married his niece while she was a katana, and the katana, and there was a co-wife, and then the man dies, and the yavam, and the man, and then she falls, then she does yibo miyun with one of the surviving brothers. So if that surviving brother is her father, well, how's their yibum? Right. Okay.
She does miyun with her now deceased husband retroactively.
Right, but I was confused about how there could be how she can fall to her father. Doesn't her father have to be dead?
Yeah, I mean, normally that wouldn't.
Our school has a note on this. Yeah, there's such a thing as an orphan in her father's lifetime. Yeah, it's a convoluted case where there was a second. She was married twice as a katana. In other words, she was married once and then divorced, and then the second time her mother marries her off. In that case, she's a orphan in the lifetime of her father, and then this is how it could work out. But of course, the outcome is a clear one, right? It's a gzeira in a case where the tsara, where the mema'enes is the daughter of the yavam, right? So obviously that's the Mishnah. Right, when you have an erva, then the tsaros of that erva are forbidden. So since that's a theoretical possibility, the rabbi said under no case does the tsara of the mema'enes is allowed to do yibah. Okay. The tsaros mita mema'enes miyasira, but we want to know, is it true that the co-wife of a mema'enes should be forbidden? Vatanan, the kulan imesu. At the end of our Mishnah, if any of these 15 women died during the lifetime of their husband, omiyano, or any of them do miyan, right, if they were katanim, tsarosan mutaros, then the co-wives would be permitted. So we want to understand, what does it mean, demiyan abiman, right? What's the situation of miyan, and under what circumstances? If you say that the Mishnah is saying that she did miyun with the original husband during the original husband's lifetime, haina grusha, right? That's the same case as a divorcee, right? Because right, just like the marriage was ended during the lifetime of the husband through divorce, it could also be ended during the husband's lifetime through miyun. Elala biyavam. No, so rather, and therefore you should not, it wouldn't be necessary for the Mishnah to list miyun separately from divorce. Elala biyavam, right? No, so we're talking about miyun that occurred to the yavam, right? So the the first husband dies, the wife, the widow, is still a minor. She could do mian even with the brother of the deceased, the yavam. And yet the Mishnah still said, tsarosei mutaros, that the, if that's the case, then the tsaros is mutter. We see that if and that could apply to tsarat pita minus, that if a yavam came into contact even with an erva, right? Then the tzara is permitted, right? So lo, the Gemara says no, that's not a good proof, right? Leol lebal. When it says mian, it means mian during the lifetime of the first husband, and the utrei gav negerushim. There's two types of divorce, right? And furthermore, so right, so the Gemara doesn't care that the Mishnah lists it two times. But it does make a difference when the minor widow, right, the Yavama, does Mian. If she did Mian with the original husband, then after the Tzara is permitted to the Yavama. But if Mian was done with the Yavam, then the Tzara is prohibited. The Gemara continues, Umay Shna, Kimian Ababal, that we're about six lines before it gets wide, the bottom. Eight, nine lines before it gets wide. Umay Shna, Kimian Ababal, what, When she does mian with the ba, when the minor does mian, refuses the original husband, right? How does that work, right? Dakrina l'nisuin. The co-wives are permitted because she has completely uprooted the marriage. It's as if the marriage no longer existed. So when later on, if the husband dies. Right, the husband was not this. These women are not co-wives of an erva, because that relationship was completely uprooted with mian. So kimiana b'yavamami. So why can't we say the same thing if she does mian with the deceased's brother? Right, we could say that it was completely nisuin kamai ka'akra. It seems a little bit counterintuitive, but even if she does mian with the yavam, with the brother of the deceased, that mian should be viewed as completely uprooting the original marriage. So the co-wives in that case also. What difference does it make whether mian was done with the baal, the original husband, or with the yavam? Either case, it uproots the original marriage. And the tsaros, the co-wives, should be permitted. And we just said, no, it makes a difference. So Mishim Tani Rami Bar Yecheskel, because this is based on something that Rami Bar Yecheskel said, Tani Rami Bar Yecheskel, Mian Ababal, right? If a minor does Mian with her husband, Mutar La'aviv, she can marry, right, the father of her first husband. But if she does yiba, if she does mian with the brother of her husband after her husband dies, asur le'aviv, at that point she's forbidden to marry the father of the now deceased first husband. So we see, according to Rami Bar Yecheskel, alma mishat nefila niyot kekalato, only after the first husband dies, do we view it as if there was some sort of relationship, and therefore the father of the deceased cannot marry the minor bride of his dead son? But had Mian been done earlier, we would not have considered there to be a relationship, and therefore the father of the husband would have been allowed to marry her. So Hakanami. Here too. Mishana fila near bitzad mito. So we're saying that even though theoretically there should be no difference between miyun with the husband versus miyun with the yavam, we see that there is a change in the relationship and the way we view the relationship if the original husband dies. The proof is that if the miyun was done and the husband's alive, the father of the husband can go ahead and marry this katana. But had the first husband died and miyun was done with a yavam, then that father-in-law, that original father-in-law, would not be allowed to marry the daughter-in-law. There's some sort of connection that's viewed there, and it becomes like quasi-erva of kala, because in general, a father-in-law is not allowed to marry his daughter-in-law. So we see that there is this possibility of viewing the miyun with the baal, which would enable the tsaros of the mema'enes to marry, to undergo yibam, be viewed differently than when miyun is done with the yavam. That's what we see there, at least according to Rami Bar Yecheskel. Okay, and the Gemara, that's the end of that discussion in the Gemara about a mema'enes and her tsaros, and the co-wives of a mema'enes. Okay. Amar Rav Asi, next case. Five lines from before it gets wild. Amar Rav Asi said, Tzara's Islandus Asura. Right, so we dealt with the Tzara of the Machsa Grusha. We dealt with the Tzara just now of a Mema'enes, right? We're learning a lot of concepts, key terms here. Now we're going to talk about the Islandus. An Islandus is a woman who is sterile, furthermore, and can't have children, right? So the tsara of an Islandus is forbidden, right? So just to remind ourselves of what the framework is of all these cases, a man married an Islandus, in addition to another wife, he dies. So according to Rav Asi, the Islandus doesn't undergo yibum, nor does the tsara, nor does the co-wife. And not only does she not do it, but it's forbidden to undergo undergo yibum. Why? So this is exerce kasov. Shnemar loya b'chor asher teled, right? Because the whole notion of yibam is to la'akim la'achiv shame, right? To have progeny for the deceased brother, and if the islandess can't do that, right? Then there's no need prat la'islandess and a yoledes, right? Excluded in this is an islandess who cannot bear a child. Right, and one piece to understand, since the islandess is excluded from the text of the Torah, so she remains eshesach, right? Even though typically eshesach is waived, right? For yibum, the pasuk says that an islandess doesn't under yibum, she remains eshesach, so there's no yibum, no chalitza, and important to note, since she doesn't undergo yibum or chalitza, she remains an erva. And if she remains an erva, not only does she remain an erva, but her tsara, the co-wife, is viewed as a tsaras erva, which the Mishnah told us, tsaras erva also don't undergo yibum, right? So that's the important point. It's not just that yibum is not effective because this islandess can't have children. It's that the Torah excludes her, and therefore the isser of eshesach, the erva of eshesach, remains in place. And so too does it extend to any co-wife, and therefore none of the co-wives of the islandess can undergo yibum either. Masi Rav Sheshes. So Rav Sheshes asks on Rav Asi, right? Shlosha achin izun shlosha nashim. Sounds like it's going to be complicated, but it's not so bad, I promise. Right, so you have three women, shlosha nashim nachrios. Three brothers married to three three women. Nachrios here means foreign, but it means that they're not related to each other, right? That's how we use it here in Yevamos, right? As opposed to, you know, the more complicated case where you have three brothers married to three sisters, that gets more complicated. Here you have three brothers married to three nice Jewish women, but they're not related to each other. One of the brothers dies and without children. And the second brother did ma'amar with the widow of the first. Ma'amar, here's another term to learn. We're learning a lot of terms today. Mian, we did machzor grushaso, we just did islandess. So ma'amar is as Rashi says very simply, kiddushe yavama, right? They're a betrothal of a yavama, right? We know that there really is no betrothal because what is right? We know that the marriage ceremony is divided into two, right? Kiddushin and Nisuin. We do it all under the chuppah. It used to be separated by 6 months to a year. Betrothal makes a woman prohibited to everyone, including her fiance. And then Nisuin allows her to be intimate and to have a relationship and to be married to the groom. Really, there's no place for Kiddushin by a Yavama, because the death of the brother created what we've been calling, right, another term we learned, the Zeka. Right? Zeka is that connection that exists between the Yavama and the Yavam. So that almost takes the place of any need for Kiddushin. Nonetheless, Midrabanan, there is this idea, let's say there's multiple brothers, right? Multiple brothers, each of them with a Zeka, until Yibum or Chalitza is done, and one of the brothers comes along and promises to do Yibum, right? So that's not a biblical construct, right? Because biblically you just do it and then it's done. And there's already a connection. But Midrabanan, we talk about Ma'amar, that there is this possibility of a betrothal to a Yavama by one of the brothers, right? And important, especially if there's multiple brothers. So in that case, and what happens then? Umes. And then this second, right? So this woman was widowed once. She underwent ma'amar, right? She was betrothed in some way to one of the brothers. And that brother, before he married her fully, before he did yibum, let's say, dies also, right? So what happens there? So now we have a third brother. What does the third brother do? Right? Then that the third brother can only do chalitza, but can't do yibum, because there was a because there's this connection between this third husband and the second husband, because the second husband never did yibum. Okay. Why? Because he says it's a pasuk shnemar umeis echa mehem yavam yavo alav. Right? One of them dies, her yavam shall cohabit with her. Mishal azikas yavam echad. Right, this teaches that yibum occurs when there's a connection to one of the brothers. Right? In this case, this woman was widowed from one brother and had a connection to the second brother who died. So that's it's really, don't think too much in terms of the logic. It's exerus akasuv. Right? There can only be one connection. There can only be one zeka, and not two when yibum is done. V'ktani Allah. And regarding this mishnah, it said, Amar Rav Yosef. Zuhi, Tzarat Eishes Ach Me'av. This is the case, She'iser, right, where you have any co-wife of this widow, right? She'iser Nefila Garamla, where she was prohibited. This is the one case where she's prohibited to do yibum, right? Because since she was supposed to do yibum with Shimon, with the second brother, let's say, And it, and because there was Mia, there was Amer, it didn't go through. So this is the one case where, you know, they're not related. It's not an erva per se, but it's, there's two zekas, and that is what prohibits yibum from occurring. The important part is shlomo tzin b'chol Torah kula could go in zos. We do not find anything like this in the entire Torah, where the woman where the woman is not an erva, and yet we say that she exempts, she can't do yibum, and she exempts she exempts the tzara. And what we say is that that the exemption of yibum on the tzaros here would be midrabanan, since the whole case is concocted because of a betrothal midrabanan, right? Mama'amer, then the consequences of that, which exclude, preclude the possibility of yibum with the tzara, is also on a rabbinic level. But this is the only case, right? This is the only case where there's no erva, right? No one's related to each other. And yet we say that because there's two zekas, there is no yibum. This is the only case. So zui, right? This idea of zeh, right? Everywhere where it talks about zeh, right? It's telling us that this is the only case, and don't think that it applies to a different case. Right? So this is the only case where there's no erva, and the tsaros are prohibited. Lav lamute, zu hi lamute mai. Why does he use the language of this is the only case where there should be yibum, but there isn't because of the two zekas? Lav lamute tsaros ilanis. Doesn't, maybe it seems to exclude the co-wives of an ilanis, desharia, meaning that they are permitted. Right? Zu hi, the one case where the tsaros of a non-erva are prohibited from yibum, is a case of two zekas. Which case is included? Which case is there yibum? The tzaras of an ilanis, which is opposite of what Ravasi said. So lo, we say no, that is not the case. Four lines from the bottom, third word on the line. Lamiuti tzaras ilanis, tasira. Right, it comes to exclude the co-wife of an ilanis that she is prohibited from yivam. Umay zuhi, what does it mean? This is the one. So it means zuhi di isu nefila garamla. This is the only case the widow two times over, right? The two zekas is the only case where there's a prohibition as a result of the inability to do yivam. Sarasa baya chalitza, but the co-wife there does require chalitza, because again, like we said, the iser of yibum is only midrabanan, because the other wife, right, the original wife, is only connected to the second brother due to ma'amer, which is midrabanan. But ilanis, right, the co-wives of an ilanis, afilu chalitza lo baye, based on the pasuk of asher teleid, ilanis doesn't undergo yibum, but even the tsaros of an ilanis not only does not undergo yibum, but there's no connection that remains, like we said earlier, an erva, and therefore neither is there yibum nor chalitza. My time, huh? So the reasons, in other words, why is it that the tsaros of a woman who has two zekas due to ma'amer, that tsara has to undergo chalitza, but the tsara of an ilanis doesn't, neither chalitza nor yibum? Well, we kind of know it, right? Because hadiraisa and hadirabanan, right? Right, because the case of an ilanis is excluded from yibum midiraisa. The case of the two zekas, one of the zekas is only midirabana. Okay. So we're going to ask another question on Ravasi. Ravasi said, tsaras ilanis, right, doesn't undergo yibum, and we saw here, nor chalitza. Tanan, we learned in the Mishnah, akula nimesu, if any of the women mentioned in the Mishnah died in the lifetime of the husband, Omiano, or they do Mion, right, as a katana, or Nisgarshu, or they're divorced, Oshinimtsu Islandis, or they are discovered to be in the category of an Islandis, so that the marriage, right? So same with Taros, then their co-wives are permitted. So we see that the tzara of an islandess is permitted. So we say, lo kasha, no, there's no question. Kanshi hikirba, Ravasi says that the tzaras of an islandess don't undergo yibum is where the husband, who's now deceased, knew that she was an islandess and he married her anyway. Right? There's no mekach tos, there's no kedushe tos, there's no mistake. He knew that he was marrying an islandess and he did it anyway. And therefore the marriage is valid. And the exemption from yibum is secure. But kanch lo yikirba, the Mishnah is talking about where he did not know she was an islandess. And when she finds out that she's an islandess, then that marriage is nullified, is null and void. And and therefore the co-wives, right, are the only ones that are really married to him. The co-wife is really married to him. The islandess is not really married to him. Therefore, the co-wife is subject to yibum. De Kanami, and this is also, you can read it in the text of it, because the Ketani Shenimtsu, the Mishnah says Shenimtsu, she was found out. Like I said, it was discovered to be an islandess. Lo Ketani Shahayu, it doesn't say that they knew her to already be an islandess. Shmamina, but that's the difference. If you know that she's an islandess when she gets married, then she exempts even her co-wives. If the man did not know, then the marriage is dissolved, and the co-wife is the only real wife, and she has to undergo yibum. Amarava. Last words on Amud Aleph. Amarava. Hilchusa, right? Top of Yibiz Amud Beis. This Amud will go a little bit much quicker. Hilchusa Tsaras Islandess Muteris, right? So Ravasi says that the Tsara of an Islandess does not undergo yibum. Rava disagrees. Rava says Tsaras Islandess Muteris. That the tzar of an islandess is permitted to undergo yibum. Afilu hikirba, even if the husband knew from the outset that she was an islandess when he married her. Afilu tzaras bito islandess, and even if she is the co-wife of one's daughter who's an islandess, right? Even if the islandess, right, is the Yavam's daughter, right? And so we could say that that's an erva, and that should prohibit the tsaras of that erva from undergoing yibum. We say no, that the islandess is completely removed, right? The islandess is completely removed from the category of yibum, and therefore, even if the Yavam is the father of the islandess, he could still do yibum with the co-wife, with his daughter's co-wife. Normally that's not allowed because it's a tzaras erva, but here, since she's completely divorced from yibum due to being an islandess, her co-wife would be permitted to her father, right? Well, filu tzaras bita islandess, filu hadik tani shenimtsu, right? It seems, and when the Mishnah says that the woman was found to be in the category of an islandess, implying that she didn't, the original husband didn't know at first. Tani Shahayu changed the Mishnah. Fine. It says Shahayu, he knew all along, and therefore it was a full Kedushin, and she exempts her, but the Tsaros are permitted, according to Rava. Kelsi Ravin Amar Rabbi Yochanan, when Ravin came, he said to Rabbi Yochanan, Achat Tsaros Mema'enes, whether a woman is a co-wife of a mama'enes, who we talked about, vachas tsaras islandess, the co-wife of an islandess, vachas tsaras machzir grushaso, the co-wife of a twice married woman to the same man, kulan mutaros. Right, so that just summed up all of the last like two blot in one statement, that all these co-wives are in fact, according to this opinion, permitted permitted to the Yavam, undergoing Yavam. Okay, different, we shift gears. Tani Rabibi, six lines from the top. Tani Rabibi. Rabibi taught Kamei de Rav Nachman. Shalosh Nashim Mishamshos B'moch. Are we talking about three women there? Are we talking about three women here? Really having not much to do with each other. This is a typical Talmudic non sequitur. Right? Three women are allowed to use a moch. A moch is comparable to a modern day diaphragm used to prevent conception. Right? Three types of women are allowed to use a moch. Kitana, Muberes, Umenika. Right? The Gemara talks about, when we talk about contraception, the Gemara has understood that there was such a notion of contraception, and that certain women are permitted to utilize contraception in this way, using a moch. And they are a minor who is married off, a pregnant woman and a nursing woman. Kitana, a minor is allowed to, a kitana would be allowed to use a moch. Why? Shema tetaber or shema tamut. Lest she become pregnant and she die. Muberes, a pregnant woman is allowed to use a moch. Shema tase ubara sandal. Lest it have a deleterious impact on the fetus that exists. There's a whole question whether a pregnant woman can get pregnant again, but at least according to the Gemara, there could be complications to the fetus already there if somehow, as a result of some sort of conception, even post first pregnancy. Menika, a nursing woman is allowed to use a moch. Shema tigmal benaviyamos, lest she, as a result of getting pregnant again, be forced to wean her child early and cause the child to die. Right, so it's interesting, what are the categories, right? We have contraception being allowed to you for the welfare of the woman herself, for the welfare of her unborn child, and for the welfare of her already born child. Those are the three cases of the Gemara. This is a source text, an important source text, for the broader conversation about contraception in general. What types are permitted? Under what circumstances is contraception permitted? The type of method is specific, is noted here, and the circumstances for permission are noted from this Gemara as well. So we go into it a little bit now. Vezu Ikitana, who is, which type of minor girl are we talking about that might get pregnant and die? From the age of 11 to the age of 12, older than 12 or younger than 11, we're not concerned. Over 12, according to the Gemara, is not a problem if she conceives, and under 11, there's no need to worry about it because it's impossible. That's the ages according to Rameir. Chomim say, achazu v'achazu, mishameshes kedarko v'olachas, right? The Chachamim say that none of these women should use a moch, right? What about the concern of the health of the woman, the health of the fetus, the health of the infant child? Why? Minashamayim yuchamu, right? Heaven will protect them. Heaven will have mercy and make sure nothing bad happens. Shem shenemar, shomer pesayim Hashem, God protects the simple. Right, it's a very interesting concept. It was used in the 60s and 70s as it related to some of the early poskim dealing with the health risks of smoking suggested that although it's not appropriate to start, it's not prohibited once you're addicted, because Shomer Pesayim Hashem, God protects those who are simple, even if you're not doing something that's healthy. Again, one could argue on that, because you need to do Ushmartem Ol Nafshoseichem. Certainly is a biblical text from Torah that contraindicates that. It was also used recently by Rav Schechter in a tshuva about washing hands on Tisha B'Av, right? In the COVID era, are you allowed to wash your hands on Tisha B'Av regularly, sanitize them in a way that's normally not allowed on the fast day? And Rav Schechter, I believe, if I remember correctly, connected it to one's general attitude towards COVID precautions, and said that if a person is very careful to wear a mask wherever it's indicated and to avoid all the and to abide by all the recommendations, then he or she would be allowed to wash his hands. If they in general are not so careful, so he employs Shomer B'Sayim Hashem, that you can't pick and choose, and you know, God will protect the simple. Interesting. Okay, let's finish up. The Gemara says that a minor is allowed to do zamoch, lest she become pregnant and die. Are we implying that there, it's possible that a minor could become pregnant and not die? If so, we could find a case where a case of a mother-in-law refuses her husband, right? In other words, I mean, it's a convoluted case that we would be very uncomfortable with. A woman is married, right, as a katana, and she gives birth, and while she's still a katana, her infant child is married off to another man, and then you have a case where there's a mother-in-law who has a child who is doing miyan. It's none. That she can never find such a case, right? So how can we say that such a case exists? So the Gemara says, Ema Shema Titaber V'Tamut. No, understand that Bryce is saying she may become pregnant and die. In other words, not that she might become pregnant and if she becomes pregnant, she might die, but she might become pregnant and if she becomes pregnant, she definitely will die. Before age 11, she can't become pregnant. After the age 12, he mace of Ubaris mace. Between age 11 and 12, she and her fetus will die. After this time, from the age of 12 and on, she could have a healthy child and it wouldn't kill her. So we say that that between the ages of 11 and 12 is this murky stage. Any, is that true? About Tani Rabbi Bar Shmuel, Yatei Yachalomar B'Chamosavim Chamosavim Chamiv Shanim Tzorayelos Hashemino Shikvar Yaladu. Right? You can't find a case. What about the statement that there was never a category of this case Shikvar Yaladu because they gave birth? Right? So how can you say Shikvar Yaladu if we say that it's impossible for such a person to give birth and to survive? No, it does mean that maybe she becomes pregnant, and if she becomes pregnant, she may die between the ages of 11 and 12. A woman could survive pregnancy. But the question that you asked, that a child was born, learning as follows, Amar Safra, Banim Harim Kim Simanim. Right, so what constitutes godless? How do you understand a man, a boy or girl reaching the age of adulthood? Right, we understand it as an age. Really, that's not the case. It's age, but it's simonim, right? It's physical, anatomical, physiological features, puberty, right? And what we say here, Rav Safra says, if a child, regardless of their age, gets pregnant and has children, then they're a gadol, right? It doesn't matter what their birth certificate says. These damri, that's why people say banim adivim misimanim, children. If a young girl has children, then that proves that's far superior than any other signs of puberty. We're just going to finish up. What difference does this make? Dafila Rabbi Yehuda. Even according to Rabbi Yehuda Damar, Ashiba Shachar, who had a later stage of puberty, right? Babanim Moda, he says it doesn't matter, right? If a young person gets pregnant and has a child, everyone agrees that that is a status that confers upon it godless, and therefore we would halachically no longer treat that individual, that young woman, as a katana, regardless of what her birth certificate says. Okay, we will stop there.
Great, Rabbi.
Thank you, Rabbi.
You're welcome. You.
Have a great day. A great week, everyone.
Great day. Bye-bye.